government is picking up its game a bit. For ASEAN, this is something that they've been looking for.
U.S.-Asia relations, the topic, as ASEAN representatives meet in Washington. It's Thursday, May 4th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're live right now on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Myanmar shuns investigation into Rohingya. Trump's pick for U.S. ambassador to China talks about North Korea, studying in the United States, urban farming, and musical help for breathing. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A meeting of foreign ministers from the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, with U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson this week comes amid ongoing tensions on the Korean Peninsula, as well as concerns over China's growing influence in Southeast Asia. The meeting is officially geared toward planning regional summits in November, which U.S. President Donald Trump is committed to attend. U.S. officials said the ASEAN foreign ministers had been calling for the meeting as part of regional efforts to engage with the new administration. Secretary of State Tillerson earlier said the ministers were expected to discuss trade, territorial claims in the South China Sea, trafficking, crime, and other issues. Analysts tell VOA ASEAN states have begun urging talks with the United States since the administration took power in January. Thitinan Pansudarak, director of Chulalongkorn University's Institute of Security and International Studies, said by rebuilding ties with Southeast Asia, the United States is acknowledging it has lost ground with China.
Clear indication that the Trump administration wants to revive these bilateral alliances and then to work with partners like Singapore and others in the region in order to elevate its position in the region in order to regain some ground vis-a-vis China.
President Trump earlier this week called on the Prime Minister of Singapore, Philippines President, and the Thai Prime Minister with a personal invitation to the White House. Analysts say the calls followed an ASEAN Leaders Summit statement that downplayed the issue of China taking a larger security presence in the South China Sea through the construction of infrastructure on disputed islands. Thitinan said the ASEAN final statement marked a diplomatic victory for China.
So China basically has got what it wanted, and China now has the upper hand. It has a number of cards it can play. The U.S. is nowhere to be seen. So Tillerson and now Donald Trump, the U.S. government, is picking up its game a little bit. And for ASEAN, this is something that they've been looking for.
Analysts say the Washington meeting is also seen as an offering a key opportunity to discuss ASEAN's concerns over the tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The Philippines President Duterte, at the end of the leaders' meeting, called on the United States to show restraint in its diplomatic standoff with North Korea over Pyongyang's nuclear weapons and missile program. Phil Robertson, Deputy Asia Director for the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch, said the U.S. President's calls to Thailand, the Philippines, and Singapore marked a return to U.S. regional security policy seen during the Cold War era.
What's quite clear is this. I mean, when you reach out to Singapore, Philippines, and Thailand all at the same time, in the same day, you're basically calling the old stalwarts, you know, the key parts of the U.S. Security presence in the Asia-Pacific region.
James Chin, director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania, says other elements in the ASEAN foreign ministers' meeting are hopes by the United States to boost regional backing in any security strategy to deal with North Korea.
It's all got to do with North Korea and China. At the present moment, it's got to do more with North Korea. It's all about building a coalition. I suspect they're in the process of confronting North Korea, regardless of what China is doing. So they're trying to put together some sort of a coalition.
Analysts say ASEAN, which is divided in support between China and the United States, is expected to be unified given the U.S. and China are cooperating to ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The meeting in Washington follows U.S. Vice President Mike Pence's recent visit to the Asia-Pacific, including Indonesia. During that visit, Pence said Washington was taking steps to strengthen our partnership with ASEAN and deepen our friendship, aiming to strengthen economic ties and security cooperation in combating terrorism and the disputes over the South China Sea. Media commentary said the administration's America First rhetoric and the U.S. withdrawal from President Barack Obama administration's Trans-Pacific Partnership had unnerved ASEAN leaders. The ASEAN region has built its economic prosperity on trade with the United States, and it's currently valued at $225 billion a year. But moves toward growing trade protectionism raised by United Nations economists this week has led to fears of a wider impact on the region's growth. The demise of the TPP has opened further opportunities for China, now the region's main trading partner, to expand its influence through regional comprehensive economic partnership. The grouping besides ASEAN states includes Australia, India, Japan, South Korea, and New Zealand. Our thanks to Ron Corbin in Bangkok for bringing us this story, and we invite you to read more by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. China calls for restraint in Korean Peninsula. Australian leader says North Korea will dominate Trump talks. China's emerging credit rating seen as press control tool. Philippine President hedges on White House visit as China friendship grows. Concerns over North Korea and China influence shadow ASEAN foreign ministers meeting. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Myanmar State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi has refused to allow a United Nations probe into alleged atrocities against minority Rohingya Muslims in the east of the country, despite pressure from the European Union and human rights organizations. As Henry Ridgewell reports, during a trip to Brussels on Wednesday, she denied ignoring alleged atrocities carried out by the military.
30-year-old Shamsida is a refugee from Myanmar, a Muslim from the Rohingya minority. The horrific events she recalls from November last year are echoed by scores of other women who have fled across the border to Bangladesh.
After the noon prayers, about 300 to 400 soldiers seized our village and surrounded our women. They started beating our children and destroyed all of our belongings in our homes. At that time, 3 soldiers raped me.
The alleged atrocities took place after an attack by Rohingya militants on a border post in October. Local witnesses say the army killed around 600 people, including children. Hundreds of women were raped. Video of the aftermath has only recently emerged, much of it too graphic to broadcast.
They are not doing only in Rakhine State, they did it in Karen State, they did it in Shan State, they're doing it in Shan State as well, and the Kachin State as well. But where is the response from the international community? And this failure of this response is not only let it down, you know, the victims. This is also indicating that the Burmese government and Burmese army, they can do similar thing in the future.
Visiting Brussels Tuesday, Myanmar's state councillor Aung San Suu Kyi again rejected a United Nations-led probe into the crackdown.
Those recommendations which will divide further the two communities in Rakhine, we will not accept because it will not help us to resolve the problems that are arising all the time.
Aung San Suu Kyi, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, denied ignoring the reports of atrocities.
All we ask for is time. We have not in any way ignored allegations of rape or murder or arson or anything. We have asked that these be placed before a court and tried.
An EU arms embargo on Myanmar remains in place. Nevertheless, the head of Myanmar's military, Min Aung Hlaing, seen here in 2015, visited Germany and Austria last week. Critics say Europe is hosting an alleged war criminal.
And his army committed crimes against humanity, and how come he's being, you know, given so warmly welcoming in in a civilized world.
Aung San Suu Kyi is to visit London next week, where protests are planned against the alleged atrocities in Rakhine State. Henry Richwell for VOA News, London. Thank you for your...
Happening now in Asia, almost 3 weeks after the United States dropped its most powerful non-nuclear bomb in eastern Afghanistan, Islamic State continues to show battlefield resilience and run its local FM radio channel. IS has used the radio to deny government claims the bomb killed more than 90 IS fighters. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today on VOA Asia. We're very happy to have you with us. President Donald Trump's nominee to be the next U.S. ambassador to China is Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. He appeared in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Tuesday and faced questions about rising tensions with North Korea, trade, security, and human rights issues. VOA's Cindy Sain reports a number of senators believe that he has unique qualifications for this job.
Concerns over North Korea's nuclear capabilities and its threatening rhetoric came up frequently, with senators asking Iowa Governor Terry Branstad about China's role in helping to rein in North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Branstad said Beijing is well aware of the threat its neighbor poses and does not want North Korean refugees pouring into China if there were a war.
I also think that they recognize, as other nations in Asia recognize, that this nuclear obsession that the leadership of North Korea has, and with guided missiles and everything, is a very serious threat to humankind, and that we need to all look at ways we can work together.
China's deteriorating record on human rights was also a focus. Branstad sought to reassure the panel.
If confirmed as ambassador, I will work every day to represent American values to the leadership of China and the Chinese people at large, values that include upholding human rights for all and a free and open market, a rules-based order in the ocean surrounding China, and the importance of free press.
A fellow Iowan pointed out Branstad is currently the longest-serving U.S. governor and highlighted his close ties to China's leader.
Importantly, Governor Branstad also knows China and its leaders well. He first met President Xi Jinping while he was visiting Iowa on an agricultural research trip in 1985.
Branstad said if confirmed by the full Senate, he would use his close ties with Xi to promote peace and stability and would not be bashful about bringing up issues the two countries disagree on. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Iowa Governor Terry Branstad is seen as an old friend of Chinese leader Xi Jinping, but analysts say that being an old friend could be a blessing and a curse. Francesco Cicci is a Beijing-based China commentator and says given the tense nature of ties and the enormous challenges the two countries face, it'll be important that Branstad has a relationship with Xi. But from his perspective, Cicci says that it's more important that Xi knows Branstad. That way, China's leader can use Branstad to relay messages to President Donald Trump when needed.
At the end of the day, the ambassador, however friendly he may be, he responds to another government. But the fact that he's friendly, especially in this moment, it could be of a great help.
David Kelly, director of research at China Policy, says the perception of being a friend of Beijing does not always play to one's favor. Kelly notes that while former U.S. Ambassador to China Gary Locke was initially perceived as being a good choice, given his Chinese heritage, he eventually ran into trouble over his assistance in the fight of a blind dissident lawyer.
But when he came into China, he then got caught up in the Chen Guangcheng affair, and he ended up being seen as no great friend of China and of being a little bit too loyal to his Washington masters.
Beijing appears to already be managing perceptions. Coverage in state media Wednesday was sparse and focused largely on Branstad's comment to make the relationship better. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news alert from VOA Asia: Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull will meet U.S. President Donald Trump officially for the first time in New York later today. But the tone of the meeting will be closely watched following a heated phone call in January, which made headlines around the world. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia and a very special segment about VOA Student Union International Student Town Hall. It happened earlier in the day at George Washington University and was hosted by the Voice of America and GW University. It's all about coming here to the United States and studying. And with me is Ali Ogden in the studio to tell us a little bit more about some of the topics that were covered.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to tell our listeners about this town hall. It's called Education Destination USA. There's some great resources there for anybody thinking about studying in the United States. What it was a panel discussion with people from the admissions office of Johns Hopkins, George Washington University, Houston Community College, several other colleges, answering questions about admission. It's a 90-minute discussion on the challenges of going to school in the United States and what you can expect. And some interesting statistics really are, among international students in the United States, 32% come from China, 16% from India, 6% from Saudi Arabia, 6% from South Korea. So you can see quite a number of international students come from the region that we cover in Asia. Things that are discussed are financial questions. You know, how do you finance your education in the United States? Are there scholarships you can get when you come to the United States? Is it possible to work while you're studying, while you're in school? So some just very good information on practical logistical questions. And then there's the emotional issues. What are the challenges when you're dealing with culture shock when you come to the United States, when English isn't your first language?
Right.
For so many Americans, when you go off to college, it's the first time you're independent and on your own, and even more so for international students. So please check it out. It's called Education Destination USA on our Facebook site.
All right. Very interesting stuff. Thanks so much, Ali. Developing at this hour in Asia, China is calling for restraint in the standoff over North Korea's nuclear and missile programs, a day after North Korea complained the United States is pushing the region closer to nuclear war. Chinese President Xi Jinping urged a return to the negotiating table as soon as possible. Follow all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, so many people in Asia live in cities, and there's a lack of fresh, organic, locally grown produce, often a downside to urban living. But growing vegetables is something that everybody can do, and it can be done with literally a handful of soil. VOA's George Pudich tells us about two amateur gardeners in the Swedish city of Gothenburg who started small but now see gardening as a way to profitability.
In affluent parts of cities like Gothenburg, there is a growing demand for fresh produce.
It's every chef's dream to get produce that we're just taking from the soil.
Hoping to earn some extra cash and inspired by similar projects in other cities, two Gothenburg residents decided to try growing vegetables on a small 250 square meter plot.
It's also it's very efficient in many ways. You don't need diesel to transport things. You don't need like big storage rooms because you deliver every day and stuff like that. People can come and harvest and go home and make their salad. So it's like it's very efficient in many ways.
Soon, they also started delivering lettuce, tomatoes, peas and kale to local restaurants 2 days a week using public transport and bicycle. When the weather cooperates, they can get up to 4 harvests a season. Gothenburg's local government supports their initiative because it creates jobs, adds more urban green space, and fosters community.
To grow food is something that we can meet around. If we don't have that much other things in common, we at least have the food.
Chefs at local restaurants say they are pleased deliveries arrive minutes after being harvested.
You can tell directly on the flavor that it's very fresh and that it's organically grown. And it's just something that's really important for us at Vroa to work with the best produce.
Farmers say anyone can do it.
If you live in the city and you're interested in growing stuff, you should be able to be a farmer in the city.
The farmers still keep their regular jobs, but say if they manage to double the present plot to 500 square meters, they will quit and devote all their time to urban farming. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Well, no matter what our age is, we always try to stay young. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti takes us on a musical journey with one person who tells us how it can help anyone with breathing problems.
And at Christmas time, we always had a stocking hung.
And when he was 6, Jack Hopkins found a plastic harmonica in his. The next week, he shocked his dad.
He heard me playing popular tune of the day, Yes or She's My Baby, and it blew his mind.
Now, thousands of songs later, Jack jams at the Virginia Harmonica Fest. It's a gray-haired bunch who blow classic tunes. Jack founded the Capitol Harmonica Club a while back. He's outlived them all, except Frank Jameson.
I'm 84, so anyway, so it just, you know, I'll never catch up to Jack, but maybe that's okay.
That's the laugh of a man who just turned 97 years old. Jack credits his strong lungs to years of cradling a mean harmonica.
That's because it's the only popular instrument that requires an inhale and an exhale to make music. In harmonica terms, draw and blow, like this. Everybody ready?
So harmonicas are physical therapy for chronic pulmonary patients in Western Maryland. This group is called the Better Breathers. Kathy Middleton has been on oxygen for 7 years.
You know, as long as it closes up like this when you breathe, mine goes like this. And when you're blowing on that harmonica, I feel like I'm breathing better.
Jack says his harmonica helped him get better from a heart attack. Yep, that's him, making music in the hospital. For Jack, music is the tempo of life, played in the key of perpetual youth.
It's been a great life, and it ain't over yet.
Carolyn Pursuti. VOA News, Norfolk, Virginia.
And with that, you've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is available in many different ways. You must be listening to it in one manner or another. We're found on iTunes, SoundCloud. You can download us as a podcast, stream us online at voanews.com, or on our Facebook page at VOA Asia. We'd also like to thank all of our listeners in Taiwan and in Myanmar who are with us today. and our director, Tracy Carter, for keeping us on time, our engineer, Jim Harmon, keeping us sound and fine, and managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Ali Ogden, who you heard just a little bit ago. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.